Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
A major project labor agreement for offshore wind, the first of its kind in the country. The jobless rate now 3.6%. We'll run down the sectors and how they fared. And today on the show, the General Vice President of the Iron Workers and the Painters and Allied Trades. Welcome to the Monday, May 9th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on at least six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. Kendall Martin is going to be our first guest on the show today, and he is the General Vice President of one of our proud sponsors. That would be Iron Workers International, ironworkers.org is their website. And he's got a real interesting history. Talk about a guy who started from the ground up. Kendall is a 28-year member of Iron Workers Local 5. They're based out of Washington, D.C. Served his apprenticeship with the local from 94 to 98. Then he became a journeyman iron worker. Spent 14 years working with his tools at various levels. Apprentice, journeyman, foreman, general foreman, superintendent, general superintendent, where he oversaw numerous projects all over the Washington, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia region. It's a significant territory. Then in 2008, Kendall was elected business manager of Local 5, served that position till the end of 2015. In January of 2016, Eric Dean, general president of the Ironworkers, appointed Kendall as general organizer and special assistant to the general president. Kendall served that role until he was reassigned in April of 18 as president of the Mid-Atlantic States District Council, servicing the areas of Maryland, Virginia, Washington, D.C., North and South Carolina, parts of West Virginia, and Pennsylvania. In July of 2020, right in the middle of the pandemic, Kendall was appointed General Vice President for the Iron Workers International and was elected to that position by the delegates of the 44th Iron Workers International Convention in August of 2021. Like I said, he started as an apprentice, and now he is General Vice President. We'll talk about choosing the trades as a viable option after high school. I mean, look how this guy, look what he accomplished starting out as an iron worker. We'll get into offshore wind. There's a lot happening along the coast there. In fact, one of the areas is New Jersey. And I just saw this story about a commitment of $50 million to workforce development in New Jersey as they become a workforce hub for the offshore wind industry. I've got another story I'm going to share with you, too, dealing with project labor agreements, a major, major move forward for the building trades. I'll get to that in a minute. But we'll talk about all of that, elections, pension relief, PLAs, the Department of Labor, and all the jobs that are happening in America as a result of the infrastructure bill, which the iron workers had a major role in. We'll touch on that as well. Jessica Padola will be joining us later in the show, and she is the Director of Government Affairs and Communications on behalf of District Council 3 of the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades. Her website is iupatdc3.org. And that area is like Missouri, Kansas City. Jessica is president, by the way, of the Greater Kansas City Coalition of Labor Union Women, CLU for short. Serves on the executive board of the Missouri AFL-CIO. She served as the deputy campaign manager in the 2018 referendum that defeated right to work in Missouri. Boy, that was a tough battle. And labor shined in that one. So obviously she's got some pretty good organizing abilities, especially when it comes to getting the right people at the polls and knock down these crazy right to work referendums. So we'll talk about what's going on in that area. And one other issue we're going to get into is the Painter's maternity leave plan. That's one of the issues. A lot of females decide not to get involved in the trades because they don't have some type of maternity leave. But that is changing. That is changing. I know the iron workers led the roll on that some years back, but more and more unions are doing that. So we'll touch on that subject with Jessica as our second guest on the show. Well, let's get into that project labor agreement that I mentioned a few minutes ago. A major victory. I'm talking a major victory for America's pro-union clean energy future. During a press conference last week at the AFL-CIO headquarters, North America's building trades unions and Ørsted signed a project labor agreement to construct the company's U.S. offshore wind farms with America's union workforce. Let me repeat that. A PLA, project labor agreement to construct the company's U.S. offshore wind farms with America's union workforce. Members of the Biden-Harris administration, including the Secretary of Commerce and Secretary of Interior, all took part in the celebration, and it is the first of its kind in the United States. That's right. The National Offshore Wind Agreement, NOAA, sets the bar for working conditions and equity, injects hundreds of millions of dollars in middle-class wages into the American economy, creates apprenticeship and career opportunities for communities most impacted by environmental injustice, and ensures projects will be built with the safest and best-trained workers in the country. Authorized by 15 international union presidents and their local affiliates, the NOAA, again, that's the National Offshore Wind Agreement, covers all of Ørsted's contractors and subcontractors that will perform offshore and wind farm construction from Maine all the way down to Florida, the entire East Coast. This is revolutionary. The PLA is a significant milestone because it creates an example for offshore wind and also other clean energy firms to follow. One where labor standards, environmental protection, and good business practices can and should go hand in hand. Liz Schuler, president of the AFL-CIO, was at that press conference last week, and she said, "This is what it looks like to put the words high road labor standards into action. This high caliber agreement for working people and the planet reminds us that clean energy jobs can and will be good paying, family sustaining union jobs." She went on to say, "This agreement is the culmination of a game changing partnership between labor and a leading clean energy company that sets a high road standard for the offshore wind industry. Together, America's workers are building a brighter future for all." Liz Schuler, president of the AFL-CIO. Can you believe that? From Maine all the way to Florida. Wow. The U.S. jobless rate remained at 3.6% in April, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Private sector firms claim to add 406,000 new jobs that month alone. Now, that put private firms almost at their job levels before the pandemic hit over 2 years ago. Governments added 22,000 jobs in April, 77% of them in local schools. The nation had 5.9 million officially jobless workers in the month of April. That's 11,000 fewer than in March. Economic Policy Institute senior analyst Elise Gould reported the private sector has claimed to recover all but 0.4% of jobs that firms said they shed when the pandemic hit. Now, public sector jobs are still down about 3.5%. Gould said, and I quote, "The labor market bounce back remains very strong, as job growth over the last year averaged 550,000 a month strikingly stronger than the prolonged recovery from the Great Recession going back to 2008. And here's the breakdown. Factories claim to create 55,000 new jobs in April, rising to 12.7 million. Transportation equipment up 13,700 jobs. That includes cars and parts. Food plants up 7,900. Healthcare firms claim to add 34,300, rising to 16.2 million. Leisure and hospitality added 78,000 jobs to 15.5 million. That sector still was one of the hardest hit from the pandemic. BLS reported leisure and hospitality workers still toil fewer hours than anyone else, 26 per week in April, and they earn the least $513.50. That's the medium figure for leisure and hospitality. That's not much at all. Construction was one exception to big job gains in April. Its firms added only 2,000 jobs, netting to 7.6 million. That left, and this is one I can't figure out, 464,000 jobless construction workers, or 4.6% when you take a look at the whole picture. That's a weird situation there. I can't understand that with all the building that's going on. Got a comment here from Scott Paul. Scott is the executive director of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, and he talked about that boost in factory jobs. He said, and I quote, "Despite a myriad of challenges, American factories are on a roll. We added a whopping 55,000 new manufacturing jobs in April. Coupled with the latest job openings data, 853,000 in March alone. We can forecast hiring strength as we look ahead. But the sector faces massive challenges. The dependence on imports and supply chains has pushed our trade deficit to a record level and has made us more vulnerable to inflation and disruptions as COVID-19 restriction measures in China ripple through the global economy." Yeah, there's parts of China that are locked down right now. Scott goes on to say, if the Fed, Federal Reserve he's referring to, tightens too much on the dollar, that will also cast an import on the future of factory jobs. But he said, one thing is certain. Now is not the time to reduce or eliminate tariffs on Chinese products. Such a move would make it even more difficult to reshore critical supply chains. That's Scott Paul, executive director of the Alliance for American Manufacturing. AmericanManufacturing.org is their website. Urge you to go there. A lot of good information there that we use on the show every day. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, the General Vice President of the Ironworkers.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
Hey, don't forget you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle, real simple, AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. By the way, we have a new website for the show you might want to check out. awfpodcasts.com, awfpodcasts.com. AWFradio.com still works, but the podcasting has exploded over the last 2 years. We started in June of 2020, and we're on at least six platforms now. So do check out the new website, and it's a great way to communicate with us. Got my number and email on there. All good stuff. We're trying to connect with all my labor union brothers and sisters out there. Growing audience, and we certainly do appreciate that. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the North Coast Labor Federation. All right, let's go to Fredericksburg, Virginia right now. And joining us on line number one is Mr. Kendall Martin. And as I indicated a few minutes ago, he started at Local 5 of the Iron Workers, which is out of Washington, in 1994. And today, he is General Vice President. Talk about going up the ladder. Kendall Martin, welcome to America's Workforce. How are we doing today, brother?
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
So let's start at the beginning here. What made you decide to become an iron worker? Go ahead.
I guess I should start from the beginning, right? So I had lived sort of a crazy life as a kid. I had some issues. I eventually decided that school just was not for me. And
gotcha.
I decided that I was going to quit school. And my father had a seafood business in the District of Columbia that he said, that's fine, but you're going to go to work. And I went to work for my father. And I don't know if you've ever worked for a family member or not, but it's not the easiest job on this planet. And I used to sell crabs, and I had this gentleman that would come down and buy crabs for me. And he was a third generation iron worker. And, and I'm not sure if you just saw how I worked or what it was, but one day he just asked me if I ever thought about doing something different. And I said, you know, I think about that quite often, you know. And he said, I think I can get you in the iron workers apprenticeship if you would be interested. And lo and behold, I went down and went down to the apprenticeship. And the first, you've got to have a high school diploma or GED or something. And I said, I have that. And what I did was I immediately went and found out how I could get my GED. And I took my GED and I got accepted into Iron Workers Local 5 apprenticeship. So I'm a true testament to, you don't have to go to college. You know, if you're a person that doesn't think that college is for you, then, you know, the trades are certainly an avenue, and it's been really good to me, for sure.
And this all began in 1994 when you joined Local 5 of the iron workers, and then spent 14 years working in various levels, foreman, general foreman, superintendent, general superintendent. I mean, you did pretty well then. And then in 2008, you became business manager of Local 5. It seems like Eric Dean, the president, saw something in you. Maybe we could talk about that, because the fact that here's a kid that dropped out of high school, decided to get involved in the trades, specifically the iron workers, and is now the general vice president. There's obviously some qualities in you, Kendall, that that Eric saw in you. Talk to me about that. And as far as what the area that you oversee today, go ahead.
Yeah. So, you know, this trade, the iron workers, gave me so much. It provided me opportunities that I would have probably never had. And if my father ever taught me one thing, he taught me a work ethic. He showed me what work ethic meant, because he worked hard. Mm-hmm. And if I received anything from my father, that's probably one of the best traits that I ever received from him. And I worked hard, and I had a desire to work hard. And I told myself, any door that ever opens, I'm going to walk through that door, and I'm going to give it an opportunity. Mm-hmm. And I took advantage of every opportunity ever given to me. And by doing so, it allowed me to become a foreman and a general foreman and a superintendent. And in 2008, our business manager had decided he was going to retire. And there was a business agent that worked for him that we thought was going to take that job when the business manager retired. And lo and behold, he decided that's not the job he wanted. And the business manager had been grooming this guy for quite a few years. And they decided to come out and visit me on a job site and asked if I would run for business manager. And I was working for one of the largest glass and glazing union national contractors in this country. Mm-hmm. And I had a pretty good job. And for about 6 months, I had to think about whether or not I was willing to give up my job that I had as a superintendent to go to work for a local union, probably one of the in a position that's probably one of the hardest jobs in our international of being a business manager. You have to deal with not only the membership, but you've got to deal with people's families, employers, the international, other trades. There's so much to that job that is difficult.
Yeah. Yeah. Kendall, I see that firsthand. I don't know if they told you, I record the show at Iron Workers Local 17 in Cleveland, Ohio, and their business manager is Rich Jordan. I know you know Rich. And these guys, along with their business agents, they're on the phone all the time, making sure people get to the jobs in time. And whether issue comes up, or maybe it's job safety or something happens on the job. I mean, it's almost like 24/7. You spend a lot of time, and that's what it takes to keep the union strong. So that is a tough job. But today, you're general vice president. So what does that job entail? Your territory has just expanded immensely. What is that like?
Yeah, so my day-to-day job is, not only do I hold the title of general vice president, but I am the president of the Ironworkers District Council for the Mid-Atlantic State. So that is truly where I spend a lot of my time working with local unions within my jurisdiction, which consists of Maryland, Virginia, the District of Columbia, Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, a piece of West Virginia, and a little piece of Pennsylvania. So I spend quite a bit of time just sort of assisting local unions in any way that I can to make sure that they are growing and doing things to improve, the life and the everything we can do to help our members. And so I'm just sort of a liaison between the international and our local unions.
I gotcha. Okay. Well, there's a lot of territory there, and there's a lot of things going on. And I want to talk about that in our next segment. Kendall Martin joining us on our live line. He is the general vice president of the Ironworkers, Ironworkers International. Website is ironworkers.org. And you can follow them on Twitter at The Ironworkers, The Ironworkers. Later in the show, we're going to check in with the Painters and Allied Trades District Council 3. That's the Kansas-Missouri area. Jessica Padola, who is the Director of Government Affairs and Communications, will be talking to us. We'll be back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
From the Golden Gate Bridge to the St. Louis Gateway Arch, the Sears Tower, and just about every building, bridge, and structure in between, our cities and towns wouldn't be the same without ironworkers. With over 3,000 contractors employing more than 130,000 highly trained ironworkers and 20,000 apprentices, the Ironworkers Union stands ready and able to shape the future of our skylines. Learn more at ironworkers.org. Ironworkers, the sky's the limit.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at uaw.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on at least six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up. Receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating. We always appreciate a five-star rating, so keep them coming. Let's go back to our live line. Joining us today is Kendall Martin. Kendall is General Vice President of the Ironworkers, one of the many proud sponsors of America's Workforce. We appreciate that. And he is also president of the Mid-Atlantic States District Council, which is a big territory, Maryland, Virginia, parts of West Virginia, Washington, D.C., North and South Carolina, and Pennsylvania. Want to talk about jobs, and you heard about this agreement last week, the NABTU, North American Building Trades, and Orsted. They signed a project labor agreement dealing with offshore wind. This is huge. I mean, it goes from Maine all the way to Florida, and I guess you were part of this conversation. Kendall, talk to me about this.
Yeah, so we're pretty excited about this new opportunity. And through the Biden administration, we are seeing a lot of activity for renewable energy. And offshore wind is a big part of that. And the ironworkers are very involved with building these projects from Maine down to through the Carolinas. And it's an exciting time. And we have, you know, we've definitely got our thumb on the pulse and working hard to make sure that we secure these jobs for our members.
Now, how did the ironworkers fit into all of this, the offshore wind? Are they, as far as construction, I mean, there's a lot of components in all this. Do you have any specifics on that?
Yeah, so the biggest part of offshore wind, the biggest part of those jobs will be onshore for assembly and also manufacturing. There is a special training that you'll need for these projects through Global Wind Organization. It's a global standard. And the ironworkers are on the forefront of that, and we are implementing this training in our training facilities now. We are standing up our first GWO-certified facility in Largo, Maryland, and we plan on taking that training and spreading it throughout the up and down the eastern seaboard in New England and right on down through the Carolinas. So we will be prepared. We're training our workforce to do those jobs, and it's an interesting time for sure.
Let's talk a little bit about the training and attracting young people like yourself. I mean, here you were in the 90s, high school dropout. You got your GED. You joined the ironworkers, and with opportunities like this, I mean, we're talking salaries well over six figures in so many trades, iron workers, obviously. How's that going with your as far as your outreach? I know you can speak about Local 5. That's where you started. But how are we doing with that, especially with all the jobs that are happening right now?
I will be honest. It's a challenge to attract people to our industry. But we are doing everything we can to reach out to different organizations, different technical schools. We are looking at different things like women in the trades. You know, we're doing pre-apprenticeship training, anything that we can do to attract young people, both men and women, to this trade. We are hitting on all cylinders, and we are doing everything we can for recruiting and opening up our training programs to these workers, and not only for our apprentices, but we are also organizing and, you know, people, workers that are already out there doing the work. We are also opening up our unions to people that already have those qualifications and bringing them in to our union.
You got to be concerned, too, with this Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. A lot of money is going to be coming down the pike here and creating even more jobs. I'm just wondering, I don't know if there's any calculations on how many iron workers' jobs. I'm sure there's some people in the office that are working on that as we speak. But just to be prepared for that workforce, that's got to be monumental in itself, don't you think?
Absolutely. And I will tell you, our general president is committed to ensuring that the iron workers don't fall short on these projects. There are, we'll just talk about Ford. So Ford's building one of the largest car manufacturing plants in the world in Memphis, Tennessee. That project will need anywhere from 1,000 to 1,200 iron workers alone. That doesn't include their battery plant, their stamping plant. That doesn't include the Intel plants that are being built in Columbus, Ohio, and in Phoenix, Arizona. There is absolutely a opportunity that is big, and the iron workers are going to seize on the moment, and we are going to do everything we can to make sure that we fulfill these jobs for our signatory employers.
Oh, yeah, that Ford plant is huge. It's well over $5 billion, and I know, in fact, we talked to one of the iron workers locals, I believe it was in Alabama, and they're sending their people over there. I mean, that's how huge that plant is and how many jobs it's going to require. I want to switch gears here a little bit and talk about well, the fact that you're general vice president. You're close to Washington, D.C., probably a safe distance. Sometimes you don't want to be in Washington, D.C. with all the crazy things that happen over there. But let's talk about some of the good things. I mean, we've got pension relief here, the American Rescue Plan. We talked about this project labor agreement here for offshore wind. We got the right guy calling the shots in the labor department with Marty Walsh, comes from the trades. All that being said, how will we look moving forward? Because, you know, Biden's doing, I mean, I just talked about the job numbers, jobless numbers here, 3.6%. We're creating a lot of jobs, but there's other issues. There's inflation out there. We got a war going on in Ukraine. But I'm just wondering, how are we positioned here, especially with all the clutter, all the noise that's out there politically? How do you feel about that, Kendall?
To be honest with you, I am concerned. There are a lot of things that this administration is doing to help workers, to make sure that there are labor standards in on every turn. There's key players in the Department of Labor and Department of Energy, and Department of Transportation. But at the end of the day, our members feel it when they drive to work, with the gas prices. And they're going to vote their pocketbooks. And that concerns me. Even though we've got a lot of really good things going on and there are, you know, a ton of work opportunities, people are feeling the pain. And we have got to figure something out between now and the midterms so that we can keep this momentum going. So the iron workers are really just addressing the issues and making sure that our members are educated on what's happening and what and the good things that are taking place, and trying not to focus on, you know, politics and parties. And we've got a lot of good things that we can talk about that this administration has done. So I'm hoping that that outweighs all this other stuff, all this other noise.
Let's talk about that communication, Kendall, if you don't mind, because it's so diluted today. There's a lot of different platforms. Social media is probably the most popular right now. I'm just wondering, in your opinion, what's the best way to get those messages to your members, to the iron workers?
So we have a political department that is headed up by Ross Templeton, who is with a really small staff, has been very impactful. Ross is in the local unions, attending meetings, sending out push notifications, communicate with our membership continually and constantly every day about the issues. And Ross does a really good job with that. We saw that when the former administration tried to implement IRAPs, and our members mobilized, and because we talked about the issue of IRAPs and how, you know, it would devastate our training programs, and our members stepped up to the plate because of that communication. And I believe that that's also happening with these other issues, and Ross does a really good job with communicating with our members, for sure.
Mm-hmm. What Kendall is referring to here, those IRAPs, are the Industry Registered Apprenticeship Programs, and it's basically a very much scaled-down version of what the building trades have done over the years. The building trades, often, as far as apprenticeship programs, they're considered the gold standard. The IRAPs, I don't even know if you could put a color on them.
Yeah, it's very watered down.
They're watered down. Let's put it that way. And yeah. They were defeated. They were defeated in that in the previous administration. All right, Kendall, I'm going to let you go. Kendall Martin joining us on our live line. He is General Vice President of the Iron Workers International. Ironworkers.org is their website. Kendall, any parting words for our audience?
Go Iron Workers.
All right. Well said, my man. Take care, stay in touch, and stay strong, all right?
Thank you.
All right, we're going to take a quick break when we come back. Jessica Padola will be joining us on behalf of the Painters and Allied Trades. That's District Council 3. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as healthcare and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit SurveyandBallotSystems.com to learn more.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. Once again, I got to plug our new website, awfpodcasts.com. And if you go to awfradio.com, it's still working, but awfpodcasts.com is a place to go to. Right now, let's go to Kansas City, Missouri. And joining us on line number two right now is Jessica Padola. Jessica serves as the Government Affairs Director for the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, and we're talking District Council 3. Their website is iupatdc3.org, and Jessica's been with the union for about 8 years. Jessica, how are we doing today?
I'm fantastic. Thank you so much for having me today.
And I see you also serve as president of the Greater Kansas City Coalition of Labor Union Women and serves on the executive board of the Missouri AFL-CIO, where you worked on that campaign to defeat right to work in Missouri. Boy, we talked a whole lot about that, and I want to get into that. But first, let's get into the painters and allied trades. Talk to me about District Council 3, the area, the work, and all that kind of stuff. Go ahead.
Sure. Well, like I said, we are out of Kansas City, Missouri. We represent half of the state of Missouri, the entire state of Kansas. And then we have a couple of counties down in Oklahoma and Arkansas. So proud to represent workers right here in heart of America, in the heart of America. So
how many locals altogether about?
Five locals. With about 1,400 members. Our members do everything from sign and display work, industrial work. I have glass manufacturers, paint manufacturers, commercial brush and roll painters, industrial painters, drywall finishers, and glazers.
And how's the work in that area of the country?
Good. It's good. You know, it's picking up. It was a slow winter. But we were also in contract negotiations across all of our construction crafts. And I know this is going to shock your listeners to hear this, but sometimes contractors slow work down right before contract negotiations begin. But work is picking back up, and our benches is relatively empty. And in fact, we are looking for apprentices. So if any of your listeners know some folks in the Kansas City region that are looking to get into a fantastic union and make a career, please let us know.
Well, that's pretty much across the board. A lot of the apprenticeship programs are filled to the gills right now. So that's a good thing. We want the work. We want to make sure it's all good union work. You get the right wages, right benefits. I understand one of the locals there, 2012? Had a little bump in the road here. What's the story there?
We did. Members of Local 2012 went out on strike last month for 10 days and shut down construction in Kansas City. We were pretty fantastic, you know, fortunate to be so fantastically supported by our brothers and sisters in the other trades. And the result of that direct action was the largest increase that our members have had in 17 years.
In 17 years. Whoa.
17 years. Yeah. Direct action works.
Direct action works. No doubt about that. Are you at liberty to give me some details on that? What kind of increases we're looking at here?
Sure. The increases were about 2.5% to 3.5% across the board, depending on the trade. You know, we here in Kansas City, one of the best things about living in Kansas City is that we have a pretty great level of cost of living here. But, you know, inflation hurts everybody. And like I have always said, our economy is having a supply chain crisis. That supply chain starts with workers. And contractors, bosses, big business, corporations, across the board. They need to understand that workers have choice. They can decide whether or not that contract that you're offering them is good enough. It's hard to compete doing this work if our contractors don't want to pay. Mm-hmm. If you're an 18, 19-year-old fresh out of high school and you have the choice to come, glaze for $18 an hour or go and work at Target for $18 an hour and not, hurt yourself. In this climate, chances are you're going to take the job that's not as physically demanding.
Right.
Part of what sets us apart is our level of pay. It's also the investment that we make in our members. And we were pleased that the contractors eventually understood that and came to the table. And we were able to present a contract that our members accepted.
Yeah, it's unfortunate they don't understand that right away. But they eventually come around because they got to get the job done. It's so important. So important.
It is okay. So important. And, yeah.
Let's talk about your role as Director of Government Affairs and Communications. And, you're in an area there. And it's not labor-friendly, so to speak. A lot of politicians keep pushing right to work. I know you were involved in that campaign in Missouri.
I was.
In fact, you probably know Gina Walsh, who comes from the Insulators. Gina was in there.
I do.
Too.
I know Sister Walsh very well. I worked with Gina when she was in the state Senate and president of our building trades here in Missouri. We miss her leadership under the dome in Jefferson City, but know that she is doing fantastic work with the Insulators and nationally. And when you have heroes to look up to like Gina Walsh in the state of Missouri, you feel pretty lucky because women leaders in the building trades are a rare breed. And we have some really great ones here. We have Elise Martini, who's the business manager of the Kansas City Building Trades Council. And we have Gina Walsh and Aurora Biller on the St. Louis side. Like, we have some really fantastic women in leadership in the state.
Now, how are we doing getting more women in the trades on that? Because nationally, I know it's moving up, but there was one time it was like 2%, maybe 3%. And I know the National Conference is trying to move that number. And
right.
You could probably speak, one of the ways to do that is to help women out with certain benefits like maternity leave. What's being done in that?
Yeah. The IUPAT announced during the height of COVID a maternity leave policy for our members. And this is a fantastic policy. It's something I worked on for 5 years. Our international has these core constituency groups. We have a women's group, a young workers group, an African-American group, and a Latino group. And those groups are tasked with, developing policies and procedures that are going to help us recruit and retain our various constituencies. So the Women's Committee, which I've been a part of for the last 5 years, we've worked on issues ranging from maternity leave to affordable child care, identifying partnerships within our respective district councils to bring more women into these trades. And I don't know if I'm more proud of defeating right to work in the state of Missouri or leading the fight for maternity care, both of which would not have been possible without my union. And it's really exciting to know that if you are a young woman coming into the IUPAT and you are of childbearing age, you are not going to have to decide between your job and having a family. This maternity leave policy will allow you to do both because, this is dangerous work. It's not easy work, and it can be really tough on a woman who is having a child, who is carrying a baby, who's pregnant. That's not easy either. Mm-hmm. And, I'll just say as a mother of three, my youngest turns 11 later this month, I would have loved to have had an opportunity to have maternity leave policy that the IUPAT has. our members will get up to $800 a week or 67% of their wages, depending on what's more. And they will they can take that leave during their pregnancy if they need to. They can take it immediately after their pregnancy as well. And so codifying that into our health and welfare funds across the country has been a priority of ours. And I'd say we've got about 80% of the district councils across the country now have some form of maternity leave in their health and welfare funds. And that number is growing. So we're really excited about that program. And so in fact, we've now had four women nationwide use it. So
that was my next question. Yeah, you started this, mm-hmm. you said, during the pandemic a couple years ago?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, you know, we have a new younger general president, Jimmy Williams. And at the time, Jimmy was our general vice president. And the subcommittee on maternity leave had worked. We had put together, you know, a big brief. We sat down in Hanover to have a meeting with Jimmy, and I was prepared to make my argument about why this was sound fiscal policy, why this was the right thing to do. And, you know, we sit down, we begin the conversation, and Jimmy was like, yeah, let's do this. Of course, let's get this done. It was the easiest sell I've ever had to do in my entire career. And that's because Jimmy understands that it's the right thing to do. Yeah. And, you know, I feel pretty fortunate to work for the most progressive of the building trades unions by far, but also, you know, a leader that understands that we're going to have to think outside of the box, and that the only way our movement continues to grow is to bring more workers in. And, you know, that looks like different people, mm-hmm. whether they're women or they're Latino or they're African-American, bringing more workers into the fold is a better thing.
Yeah.
And I'm really excited about the work we're doing.
Well, you should be. That's awesome. And to your point, Jimmy Williams Jr. is a great guy. He's been on the show a number of times. In fact, I go way back with this show. I started hosting this show back in 98, and I had Jimmy's father on a regular basis.
How cool.
Yeah, yeah, because the Painters and Allied Trades are also sponsors of America's Workforce. So we appreciate everything that you have done, District Council 3. We're District Council 6 in the Northeast Ohio area, so good people all around.
Yes, yes. In fact, you had some painters and glazers out on strike up in District Council 6 last week. And I believe that both of those strikes have been resolved.
Yeah. Well, contractors got the message. That's what it's all about.
Yep. And workers have got the message, too. Workers know that they have the power. You know, the increase of unionization rates across the board in this country is exciting. But it is also a clarion call to labor. You know, we have to organize. We have to organize workers where they are. And if that's at, you know, the Starbucks that's just around the corner from my house that has filed for a union election, or if that is, you know, at a factory in Flint and we have to start by sitting down on the job. Workers have the power, and the more we realize that we have the power, the better our economy is going to be, the better our families are going to be, and the better future we're all going to create for each other. So it's kind of an exciting time to be in labor, to be honest. So
I hear you. It's good to be in the middle of it all. Jessica Padola, yep. joining us on our live line. She is Director of Government Affairs and Communications on behalf of District Council 3, the Painters and Allied Trades, IUPATDC3. com. Jessica, keep up the fight. Let's stay in touch on these matters, okay?
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me, and we really appreciate it. And solidarity to my fellow workers out there.
That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, the latest from the communication workers and the postal workers. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening. And be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.